Thanks for joining us today on RV Tech Talk, a podcast produced by the National RV Training Academy that is devoted to discussing ways to keep RVs in tip-top shape and ways to make money fixing or inspecting recreation vehicles. My name is Greg Gerber, your host for today's show. Today's show is going to focus on a graduate of the technician training program at the Academy who went on to launch a successful mobile RV service business in Sequim, Washington. Today's episode is sponsored by Work Camper News, a magazine and online publication that connects RVers to full and part-time jobs around the country. Whether it is running a business from your RV or working short-term jobs for a variety of employers, Work Camper News can give you information to help you plan a course to live your own dream and get you on the road faster than you thought possible. For more information about opportunities to live, work, and play in your RV, visit www.workcampernews.com. Darren Kep describes himself as a recovering engineer. He loved his job and the work it entailed, but it often required him to be away from home for extended periods of time. As a father of two children, he realized he was missing out on a significant portion of their lives. He wanted to be a daddy on demand so he could be invested in their lives as they grew up. As you might imagine, he made a very good salary as an engineer, but he felt called to be more than just the guy who earns money and sees his kids for a few minutes every couple of days. So shortly after his youngest son was born, he quit his engineering job on nothing but faith that something would show up to replace the income. The family was living in an RV, so he took an online training course to learn how to fix many common problems. Soon enough, he was being asked to fix campers at his RV park and at nearby RV parks as well. One day, Darren had a chance encounter with a mobile service technician, and it opened his eyes to a way to support his family without lengthy travel excursions to faraway places. He got a job as a repair technician working for an RV dealership, but was soon making as much money evenings and weekends as he was at his full-time job, so he ventured out on his own, and today Darren operates a very busy, very successful mobile repair business. It's a really interesting story, and he'll tell you how he got started, how he marketed it, and what it takes to be a full-time, self-employed mobile RV service technician. So please welcome Darren Kep to the show. Thanks for joining us today, Darren. It's greatly appreciated. It's always nice to talk to somebody who's become a trained mobile technician. And tell us a little bit about who you are and where you're out of.
Well, thank you, Greg. My name's Darren, and we started mobile RV service around 2014, and it was we started it in Texas, and then we've since moved up here to Washington State. There's a tremendous need for it up here, so not anymore now that we're here. So, but it all started because I was a full-time RVer myself and needed some work done on my RV. The dealerships were backed up, and I really didn't feel call out bad things, but I didn't feel comfortable leaving my, as a full-timer, moving out, getting into a hotel and leaving my entire home with the shop for weeks at a time.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, I learned how to fix it myself. And that turned into a passion I became very good at. And then we decided to resign from my other career and start a mobile RV service business. Led to what it is today.
What's your other career?
I'm a recovering engineer.
Recovering engineer.
Yeah. My mind still goes there sometimes with engineering, but I used to automate airport baggage systems, aerospace assembly equipment, climate chambers, a lot of industrial automation type systems. I would write the software, do the commissioning for it, be in the field for extended periods of time while we're breathing life into these billion-dollar systems, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a senior level engineer in that arena.
Yeah, that meant you had a very your cubicle of your own, right?
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Hard hat and steel-toed boots, laptop computer thrown over my bag, climbing up on a catwalk, plugging into a PLC somewhere, or tracing a wire down to a motor control center to figure out that the machine panel shop didn't land the wire on the right number. Oh yeah, I could tell you horror stories about e-stops not wired correctly and shutting down an entire airport.
So ain't it great?
You'll hear about that on the news, I'm sure.
Sure. So are you married?
Yes, happily married. Got married in 97. Don't hold me. Okay, 10/11/97. There you go. Okay, she let me pick the day. And married my college sweetheart. We've been married, I think, 22 years this October. And I'm an older dad, so we've got a 10-year-old and a Nope, sorry, she just turned 11. She just turned 11 going on 16.
Yep.
I'm sure you know how that works with your daughters. So I've got a 9-year-old son and 11-year-old daughter. I love being an older dad. I'm much more relaxed, much more, okay, we'll deal with the mess, you know.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah.
That's neat. So you started your business, My RV Works. Tell us the kinds of services that you provide.
Okay. We don't do anything mechanical. In other words, I'm not going to work on your drive line or your transmission or your brakes. And that also includes we don't do generators and we don't do body work. It's hard to do all that kind of stuff in the field. But everything else on the RV, we would work on. We're really good on the hydraulic slide rooms. Anything electrical is my passion. I love fixing electrical things. AC, DC, it makes no difference to me. Refrigerators, plumbing, satellites, leveling systems, water heaters, furnaces, batteries, converters, chargers, aqua hots, hurricane heating systems, Girard, Truma. We do extended service plans. We work as much as we can with factory warranty, but sometimes the factory wants you to take it back to the dealership, and that's kind of out of our control. Awnings, we do summerization, winterizations. We do seminars for rallies. Because of my background, if you wanted your RV totally automated with its own custom automation system, hey, we do that too. I wish I got more of those kind of calls, but no, most of it's just doing preventative maintenance seminars. And unfortunately, we're the ones get called in because people did not do their maintenance and it broke.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're always trying to advocate and beat the drum about preventative maintenance to learn what needs to be done. And what we're finding is a lot of people don't know what they need to do. On a weekly, a monthly, a semi-annual and an annual, you know, propane detector every 5 years, change it. Those types of things. So we're trying to put some resources together to put on our website so people can just use that as a resource to find out like, well, the analogy of it is, I don't do generators, but if you did have a generator, you have this sheet that says, okay, at 100 hours, do this, at 500 hours, do that, at 1,000 hours, do that. And we're putting together a sheet similar to all the systems on your RV, check your propane every year because there's a butyl rubber diaphragm in there. It could fatigue and you're supposed to check it periodically. Things like that, back flush your water heater every year. And we're trying to put videos together on all of that so people can watch the videos that we're making and learn how to do all these preventative maintenance type things.
But you don't
to work ourselves out of a job.
Great. You don't have a physical location, though. You're a mobile tech.
That is correct. We thought about having a shop, but I like the idea of being mobile. We work very closely with some shops in this area. They love us. We love them. And we send them the generator works, the roof jobs, the tank jobs, the things that would benefit with a forklift and a concrete floor. And they send us the ones where, okay, it's a water heater. I can just pull up and walk 30 feet and get to the job.
Yes.
And so we've worked really well with that. And so our niche market, if you will, is the kind of stuff that we can work on in the field. We have done roofs before, but I don't do them anymore in the field. It's just too much to do for a field
right.
job.
So. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So I have to ask that the obvious question is, how do you go from being an engineer to a technician? You obviously had some training somewhere.
Well, God had a different plan for me, to be honest. When my daughter was born, I missed her first words, missed her first steps, missed her first everything. We were working in Buffalo International Airport at that time. So if you ever flew into Buffalo International, I'm the engineer that helped commission all that stuff. Yay. And so we'd work and I'd come home and I'd pick up my daughter she's just an infant, but she had that look in her eye like, I don't know you. Mm-hmm. And that would just rip my heart out. And I'm just so sad. And my wife would see me a text, oh, Madison took her first bike today. Madison took her first walk today. And I missed it. And then we found out we were pregnant again. And this time my company gave me the opportunity to go to Miami to thaw out from doing Buffalo. We were in Buffalo for about 18 months on that job. And they said, okay, we're going to send you to Miami to thaw out a little bit. Well, we found out we were pregnant again. And then I told myself, okay, if I'm any kind of an engineer, I should be able to engineer my exit strategy. So I began this idea that how do I engineer being a dad? My wife and I sat down and we basically came up with four design criteria. Okay, you got to put this in engineering perspective, right? You got to do it that way. And the design criteria was we wanted to raise the children around entrepreneurship. That was one of the things we wanted to do. I wanted my children to be raised around entrepreneurship. My wife and I did. We also wanted to raise our kids in a homeschooling or road schooling environment where we could stay RVing. We had fallen in love with RVing at this point. We've been full-timing since 2007. Is that about right? Yeah, 2007, we started full-timing. And we did that so as an engineer, I could go to the jobs instead of staying in hotels. We had stayed in hotels for years prior to that, and we decided, well, hey, let's get an RV instead. But the four criteria were we wanted to raise our kids around entrepreneurship. I wanted to be a daddy on demand and have my wife be a mommy on demand. We wanted to road school our kids, and we wanted to do laps around the United States. And how are we going to pull that whole thing off? And engineering was going to allow us to do part of that because the money was good and the jobs were all over. And if you're an engineer and you're willing to go out into the field, and then the company would be happy to have you. But it wouldn't allow me to be a daddy on demand. So coinciding with my son's birth, I resigned as an engineer on nothing but faith. It was important for me to sow Christ and God into my children, and I couldn't do that if I wasn't there. I kind of, on a side note, I feel our country has a bit of a daddy problem, and daddies need to be a little more present in their children's upbringing. And I didn't want my kids sitting on the sideline watching dad leave and go to work and not be there to help them through some of their issues that daddy mm-hmm. can help them with. So I don't know if that's okay to say mm-hmm. or not, but that's kind of sure. my story. So I resigned from a six-figure income, senior-level systems engineer, six-figure healthy job security income on nothing but faith, and just walked away from it all. And my plan was to automate RVs and automate RV parks. And we're still doing that. That's still a whole other business we're playing with. And when I say automate RVs, I'm not talking about making the lights turn on and off. This is something much, much more than that. So I had this desire to automate RVs, automate RV parks, but to automate my RV, I need to learn how it works. And that ties into me becoming an RV tech. So I decided to figure out how my RV worked. And that's where I was introduced to Terry Cooper. And he had, before he started the programs he has now, he had this take-home technician course that was on a DVD I think it was $300, and you'd get this DVD, and he had all these little course content on that DVD of jobs that they had done in Waco with the FEMA trailers. So from all those videos, I learned how to fix my RV. We had been living in it for 5 years at that point. The campground started to send me work, but it was a distraction because my plan was to automate the RV. And now all of a sudden the campground's sending all these jobs over to me. Like, hey, Darren, hey, this guy's got something with his water heater. Well, tell him to take it to the dealership. No, you fixed yours. You can fix theirs. I'm like, uh-huh. And I had put a business plan together to automate RVs. And I had, prayed over it and I faxed it to God. I'm like, okay, God, here's my plan. This is what I want to do. I want to automate RVs. Here we go. And then the phone's ringing and all these other things. And I kind of got a little mad at God. You're like, did you get my facts? This is my plan. why are you sending me all these distractions? And there was this one particular day that I was disgruntled and I was angry and I was working on, I don't remember what, if it was a water heater or something. And I walked left instead of right and dragging my feet and didn't want to go. And I run into this guy in a van who's a mobile RV service guy. It was just weird chance encounter. If I would have been 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later, gone left instead of right, with these really fine lines, and we didn't talk long, but basically he was in Buffalo, New York. That's where he lived. But in the winter times, he would go down to Arizona, and there would be like a RV park with like 1,000 slips in it. And he's been going there for years, and they knew he was coming. They loved him, and they'd give him a nice slip. He's like, oh yeah, I'll go down there for 6 months, then I come back up here in the summertime, go fishing and hang out with my family. And he had his wife and kids with him on this day that I saw him. And I'm like, wow, for real? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, but you, how, can you make any money doing that? He's like, yeah, we do about 60 to 80,000 a year in 6 months. Wow. I was floored. It's like, well, I got to go now. He was saying he had to get going. And I'm like, I had a new dream. So God had a different plan for me. So I kind of hung up my automation idea and I called Terry back, Terry Cooper. And I'm like, Terry, that course you put together, I'm thinking about being an RV tech. But I don't know if I qualify. I don't have any tattoos or anything. And all these guys I see, they all look pretty rough. And I don't know that I fit that mold. But, you know, I'm an engineer. Do you think I could be an RV tech? He said I'd be I remember his words. He's like, oh, you'd be a tremendous RV technician. And I did have to submit my ego, because all my education and all my training and all my global scope of work, I really had a hard time. I felt I was throwing all my career away to go work on your black tank. And it really did take some time to submit my ego a little bit. And so once we got past that, Terry was instrumental in helping me get a job at a dealership in Texas. He kind of played Cupid. And so I went to this dealership in Texas and learned how to fix everything. And here I am. So there's, we'd fill in all the blanks, but that's kind of the high road of how it all came together.
Well, that's neat. And so you just started attending training back then. Terry was doing the mobile RV service training, wasn't he?
Well, he had Mobile RV Academy. I don't know that him and Steve had started working together yet. At the time, Terry had the dream of the mobile tech for RV campground. I don't know that he'd started that yet. He had the idea of RV inspections. It was just a dream of his, you know, like a seed. Mm-hmm. And I think he had just launched RV Mobile Academy, or maybe it was in its first couple of years. And I remember with Terry, we were at a rendezvous one time in Heber Springs, and we were kind of sitting on that outside area where the you got all your conferences, and then there's this thing. He was sitting over in a corner, and I was like, well, Darren, if you get anything big, let me know. I'd like to. It looks like him and Steve got something going really, really good. And then the other thing I remember after one of the rendezvous, I walked into Steve Anderson's office, and he and I joked about this just recently. And I'm like, well, Steve, I mean, I'd love to be a work camper, but I need to make some money, man. I got a brand new family. And he said, Darren, if you think of anything, you figure that out, you know? So he kind of gave it back to me, like, for me to figure this out. And, which was exactly what I needed to hear. You know, it was kind of like a good challenge in a way. And, so this is what I came up with.
Very good. Very good. So how long did it take you to complete all of the training that you needed for this business?
Loaded question. Interesting how to answer that. I do get that question a lot. Specifically to be an RV tech, I've got a very good friend of mine in Texas. I don't want to mention his name or his business. I could, but he is an engineer like myself, and we met doing airport automation jobs, and he was trying to recruit me back into being an engineer after I resigned. And so he would come visit me. I was in Wichita, Texas at the time, and he was down in Houston, and he would come visit me. He was doing automation jobs in Dubai on the oil derricks down there. And he's like, oh, Darren, you got to come. It's 30 days on, 30 days off, 30 days on, 30 days off. And I said, nope, I'm going to stick to this. This is what I'm going to do. He's like, oh, Darren, you can't take all your engineering and all your education and just throw it away to do, like, I always tease on black tanks because that's like pretty nasty. Anyway, long story short, on his 30 days off, he'd come visit me and stay a week or two. We're both Marines, and we tell Marine stories and sit around the campfire and just reminisce the old times. And anyway, I would take him on some job sites with me. And anyway, long story short, he's like, oh my God, do you think this is something I can do? And so we were talking money, and he's like, Darren, you make more money than I do, and I got to fly 16 hours over to Dubai. Mm-hmm. So to your question, how long does it take? I work with him a little bit on some of the questions on the certification. I have all the books, if you will. And So he's a very smart guy. He read all the books, passed the test on the first thing without ever having worked on an RV. So how long does it take to learn it? You could just read all the manuals and jump right in. If you're a smart person, I'm not smart. So I needed more of a hands-on thing. So I worked dealership for 2.5 years. It got to the point during that 2.5 years working at a dealership where an RV, I remember the first RV they brought into my bay, I was very nervous. Now I had taken all the courses that Terry offered in his take-home course and I'd worked on my RV. But the RV would be pulled into my bay and I was very nervous. The biggest question that I had at that time was, where do you start? Whether it's a PDI, whether it's a diagnosing a water heater not working or the awning's not working, the question I had was, where do you start? And it took a while for me to figure out where to start diagnosing, where to start troubleshooting, where to pick up the trail. If you're going to go hunting, where do you pick up the scent? Or fishing, you're looking at this big ocean, where do you throw your hook? And so some people pick up on that sooner than others. And so on our YouTube videos, I'm starting to put them in the framework to tell people, okay, this is the problem. This is what the customer is having an issue with. This is where I would start. And this is why I would start at this point. So as soon as step one is to understand theory of operation. You have to get, okay, here's what happens on a furnace. This is what that click sound means. And here's how a water heater is supposed to work. This is a refrigerator, because these are your bread and butter systems that fail. Once you understand the theory of operation and you understand what the customer's complaint is, the next question is, where do you start? So as soon as you figure out where to start, you can pick up the trail and that tells you to go left or right or whatever. And as soon as you get to that point, you're ready. You're take off the leash, go have a good time. For me, it took several months to get to that point, and you just take it system by system by system. Where it is now, a person can just explain to me what their problem is, and okay, it's going to be that. So I think I may have answered that, but I worked at the dealership for 2.5 years, and it got to the point where an RV didn't roll into my bay, and I didn't have all the tools and all the expertise, didn't have to consult anything, and I had it fixed in no time, and it was back out again. Mm-hmm. That's when I knew I was ready to go out on my own.
Okay, and you decided to go out on your own just because you saw a need up there in Washington?
I hated working for somebody else. I had to go back to those 4 points, daddy on demand. And as long as I was working 8 to 10 hours for another company, I was not a daddy on demand. I wanted to raise my kids, run entrepreneurship. And as long as I was working for somebody for a paycheck, all my kids saw was daddy going to work for somebody else. I was not building my dream. I was building their dream. We were not able to do laps around the United States, and we were homeschooling. So out of the 4 things that my wife and I set out to achieve, we were only achieving one of them. Mm-hmm. So on fear and faith, we launched our business. The first customer I ever had was a water heater job, and man, I could do backstrokes on water heaters. But I remember driving to this first job, and it was a water heater job. It was not in my service bay. I did not have my buddies next door if I ever get stuck, you know. Mm-hmm. It was all on my own, and I was so scared, and I was like deer in headlights when I'm looking at this water heater, and I was nervous, but it's muscle memory. And then you just muddle your way through it. And I think the first one or two jobs on my own were the ones that I was the most scared, not because I didn't know how to fix a water heater, but because I was on my own. No support, no backup, nothing. Once I made it through that fear, it was okay. Mm-hmm. I've also done a lot of skydiving, and everybody asked me if it was scary. The first jump was not scary because you're right at a jump school, and the instructor tells you to get out on the airplane and let go, and you're still in class. The second jump, I was very scared. So the second jump was more scary mm-hmm. than the first jump, because this time he didn't tell you to do anything. So you confront your fear. You get away from the shore a little bit, and I think maybe that's what holds people back. They don't want to let go of the shore. They're afraid. And I think if you're going to ever achieve anything worthwhile, you do need to swim out a little bit. And experience, what's the worst that could happen? You know, here's your money back, customer. Sorry, I guess I'm going to go back and get a job. that's you know, right. So it wasn't life or death, but it turned out okay. So the business is, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. How did you find more customers then?
in the beginning, we printed out some business cards and just would go all over the place. I felt back then that if I play Johnny Appleseed and populate business cards in enough RV parks, that people would find us. And to be honest with you, most of our customers do not come from RV parks. That was a bit of a wake-up call for me. I'd say, and I actually have the data here. I haven't looked it up lately, but a good portion of our customers is referral. And so on my website, I wrote the thing that I feel like I'm a farmer and my customers are my crops. And so if I husband those crops and I tend to those crops and I love on those crops and I pinch them when I need to and just water them, then those crops will bloom. In the Marine Corps, we have a saying, you take care of your men take care of the mission. And I just morphed that a little bit to say, if I take care of my customers will take care of my business. So I became just fanatical about loving on customers. I've done a lot of reading and I like Napoleon Hill. He always talked about, providing more work than you're paid for. So I would always make sure that I always did more, stayed a little longer, answered more questions. That's kind of how the business grew, is that whole, I'm going to call it the old fashioned, do more than you're being paid for. And another thing we did was we did warranty work and extended warranty work from day one. And that ate our lunch quite a bit the first year. We didn't really understand what we were getting ourselves into with warranty and extended service. It's got a bit of an ugly underbelly to it, if you will. And so the first year, but a lot of customers came to us because we did that. And we lost a lot of money doing it that too. So we've since learned how to play the game fair, honest, integrity, legitimately. And I think that the extended service providers, the warranty companies, they see our name and like, okay, this is legit business. We've been vetted. They've vetted us. Cause there's a lot of ugly players in that. We're not one of them. We've had to totally separate ourselves from the ugly underbelly of that.
Okay.
But, so with warranty, we do a lot with extended service. I knew that people would, I visualized myself, how would I find somebody? And the internet search was the big thing. And so I put my very first website together and we've since got professional website people. And I'd recommend that, getting a professional person to do your website that understands the SEO and understands how to do all the back under the hood type stuff to tune it. Anybody can make a website look pretty, but there's a lot of behind the scenes and I've got the best guy in the world that does that for us. He doesn't want to do anybody else's, but because overwhelmingly people, I'll ask a question how they found us and overwhelmingly it's a search, web search. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is now we have a YouTube channel and people find us on YouTube and they find us that way as well. And that, of course that helps your SEO numbers.
Right.
So, you got to play the long game. I don't know of a quick, get rich quick scheme work in this business. There is folks like myself that you can sit at our feet and I can answer a lot of questions, but at the end of the day, somebody's got to be willing to put in the work and be ethical and honest mm-hmm. about it and love on their customers, do the absolute best they could possibly do and don't take any shortcuts. We've been sued. We've had to sue. We've taken mechanics lien. We've had to write off things. We've had to fight credit card companies. We've had to do all the things big companies have to do. And I think it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I know that word of mouth advertising is very, very important. In fact, an example from my own experience, I have three daughters, as you and I have talked about. And when the oldest turned 12, she wanted to go babysit. And she was certified by the American Red Cross. So we, like you, worked up business cards. And she invested one afternoon parking her little bottom outside of an elementary school and handing a business card to every mom who showed up to pick up a kid. And that referral that got her so much business that it continued to grow. She never had to do anything else. She had more work than she'd possibly know what to do with. And she got so much work that when her the younger sisters grew up, they took over her clients and it just worked very well for everyone. So yeah, it's that initial push of getting the customers, getting in front of the customers and letting them know you're there, but then it's providing the service that really generates that word of mouth.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Super.
Now, and the other thing is we do seminars and that's been big for us. We do seminars and, We don't charge for those. And the biggest theme that we push on these seminars is preventative maintenance. And we did one not too long ago on preventative maintenance. And the campgrounds, we don't charge anything for this. We'll just go in for an hour or two. And I have an outline, if you will, of things I want to talk about. And I'll talk about those things. And then I open it up to questions. And that's what I'm really after. I'm not after getting through my little outline of things. I'm really getting to the open floor question part. That's the thing that's going to drive these seminars 2, 3, 4 hours long. So my loss leader, if you will, is I'm going to get in there and just talk about some, you know, back flusher water heater and do this at the other. Because it's when that floor opens up to questions, it's for the first time, maybe for the first time, that RV owner is in front of a certified RV technician that can ask questions, because usually your certified RV techs, they're behind that. You never talk. You will never see one. They're behind the scenes. The dealerships and the shops do a huge job of keeping them kind of locked up in the back. And so what happens is the RVers start talking to other RVers, and you get this incorrect information flowing around within the RV park. So I love that. That's been a huge thing for us in the beginning when we were starting our business, was just telling campgrounds like, okay, hey, we're offering a free seminar for your RVers. We would do that. I did one on winter living in your RV in the wintertime, because I've been through 2 Buffalo winters in my RV, and I think that kind of makes me an expert right now. and you might get 10, you might get 20, you might get 50. Mm-hmm. But I would say every single time I've ever done one of those seminars, every single time without fail, I always am able to book a customer or 2 or 3 or 4 out of that right there. Mm-hmm. And what that does is that kind of makes you the expert, if you will. You make yourself available. You get in the way of the problem. And I might be talking about a light bulb, and then they raise their hand. They say, well, I have a question with my water heater. And well, how about this? How about that? Well, if you are in fact an RV technician and you are a professional, then you should be able to field all these questions and put yourself in the way of the problem. And so you can help. Mm-hmm. So between the business cards and the seminars and the website search, those are where it's at now. Is I don't think I could shut my business down right now. We've created a monster. the world would revolt if I said, okay, I'm going to shut down business and go do something else now.
And so now you're making, how long has this been going on? You've been full-time doing this on your own for about 3 years?
No, since 2014.
2014.
So for okay. 5 years.
5 years. It's been okay.
In S Corp for 5 years. And while I was at the dealership, for the last year I was at the dealership was sending me jobs. They knew I wasn't going to stay. So, I would go work jobs on the weekends, and I'd make more money on the weekend than I would in the entire week at the dealership. But they knew I was going to be leaving, and these are customers that would have never gone to the dealership anyway. Mm-hmm. Not all dealerships are going to do that, but I had my own insurance.
How long did it take you to replace your income then? That cushy lifestyle that you enjoyed as an engineer working for somebody else. How long did it take for you to get close to making up that difference on your own?
If you do your business correctly, I would say within the second year, we were doing really, really well there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm also very tired. We're at the point now where we're considering hiring some additional techs. That's something I need to go out into the deep water again, you know? Mm-hmm. When I was working as an engineer, the money was phenomenal. The money was great. And we've locked some of that down. That's all tied up in our investments and everything. So that's not to be touched, is my wife and I, we have agreed. When we started this business, we tapped into some of that just to get started, because it does cost some money to start these businesses up.
You got to get tools, education, training, licenses, equipment.
Yep.
Inventory. Right.
The truck, the trailer, you could do a van, you could do a panel van there. But if you're mobile, you have to have quite an investment in your wheels to mm-hmm. get to the job site. So 4-wheel drive, tight turning radius in some of these people's backyards. And then inventory. I think I probably carry around $80,000 worth of tools and inventory just in my trailer. And that's some money. The mm-hmm. truck itself is an $80,000 truck. So you've got that. And then you've got the insurance that you carry. We carry liability insurance, shopkeepers coverage, inland marine coverage, plus we're incorporated. And then we have what are they called? The financial.
Certified public accountant, CPA.
Yeah. One of those guys. Yeah. They're not cheap. mm-hmm. You do all those things, but then I put my head on my pillow at night knowing that all my taxes were paid. Here in Washington, we have to pay taxes on every little place we go. And so if I'm in Port Angeles, we're 8.5%, but if I'm out in the county, we're 8.8 in the city, 8.5 in the county. Oh, but if I go over to Sequim, we're another 8-point thing. Oh, if I go over to Paulsbo, what's that county? So we have to track with GPS every location that we do these jobs at, map that over to the tax rate for that location. And every quarter we have to pay that tax to that. So it's not like one tax goes to the state. It's all these little bitty. So the CPA and the bookkeeper manages all that. I don't have the patience or the time to do that.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask then. How do you handle all of the administrative stuff, the making the appointments, the doing the follow-up calls? Does your wife help you with this?
Perfect. Okay. Yes. What we've done. Oh, that's a fun one. So yes, this is a true husband-wife business, and I do have my kids involved in it as well. So my wife handles all the back office. She makes the phone calls. She runs the parts, the extended service plans, and all that. So she is big time involved in the back office, making sure that the business keeps running, while I'm out spinning the wrenches, if you will. So the typical way. When we started the business, I answered my phone every time. And so here would be the scenario, Greg, I'm working on your RV and all of a sudden my phone rings. And so you're paying me money to work on your water heater. Okay. So now the phone rings. So I answer my phone and I've never had a 30-second phone call. These phone calls are typically 15, 20 minutes to half an hour long. You got to hear about their dog. And I love that. I don't have time for that though. And meanwhile, I'm at, hey, Greg, do you have a pen? Okay, can I get a piece of paper? See, and maybe it's posture because I'm so busy. But meanwhile, I'm thinking in my mind, you're thinking, I'm paying this guy to work on my water heater. My water heater's not getting fixed. And he's on the phone booking another job. Mm-hmm. Me as a business person, I'm thinking I'm a hoss because I got all this work. I'm so important. But at the end of the day, all I have left is I finished you. I spent maybe an hour on the phone talking to three different people, got all these little scribbles of paper and all my little handwriting. Maybe I was underneath an RV. And so anyway, you get this scenario. I decided to stop answering my phone. So my phone became my inbox. And that was a very hard thing to do in the beginning because my reaction was to answer the phone. I want to be one of these guys that answers a phone. Okay, so let's fast forward. So what I found is Google Forms, and Microsoft has Microsoft Forms. I spent quite a bit of time literally developing questions to ask people. So now if you go to our website, if you go to my, if you call my, if basically if you need a mobile service from our business, I'm going to put you in a funnel. I don't care if you come in through text, through email, through carrier pigeon, through phone call, through whatever, you have to go through my service writer. If you were to take your RV to a shop, take your car to Jiffy Lube or whatever, you're going to go through that process of name, address, what's the problem, blah, blah, blah. Me being an automation engineer, I had to automate that process. And so I created a Google form. It doesn't cost anything. And so I spent a lot of time trying to make it easy, simple, ask simple questions, yes, no, checkbox, checkbox, checkbox. And so that form was created. And when they click submit, they get an email right away saying, we got your form. And I get an email with all their information. I then take that and I, you know, distill it out and I put it in my calendar. I try to get back to people within a day or two. And, but that in itself right there kind of saved the whole process and allowed me to focus on you when I'm on your RV working on your customer. If my phone rings, I don't even have it with me. It's in my truck on charge. It's a distraction. I don't keep it with me. So I'm able to get more things done during the day. The phone does not become a distraction, but yet people are still able to get their information to us. And then at the time that I can actually do something with the information, not when I'm underneath your RV trying to pull a wire for your backup camera with the scribbled. I used to carry a notebook and a pen with me at all times for these phone calls. Now I don't do that. So that's the process we use to onboard new customers. And we get anywhere from 3 to 5 to sometimes 7 to 10 of those a day.
Wow.
People coming in. So I know that process works.
Okay.
And one of the questions I have on that is, I don't know exactly how it's worded, but how can I improve the process? Was this painful? And they're like, oh, we loved it. Great questions. And it's got the jump. So if yours is a refrigerator, then I'm not going to ask you any water heater questions. But if it is a refrigerator, then I'm going to ask you specific refrigerator questions. So that when I review this form, I can say, okay, it's a Dometic and they're having problems with their electric. Okay, so I need to make sure when I go on the job site, I need a Dometic heating element for a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 refrigerator. So when I show up to the job, I know what their refrigerator is, what their complaint is, and I make sure I show up with the parts I need.
That's neat.
Instead of just saying, yep, it's a refrigerator problem, and I go up there and I'm thinking it's Norcold, but it's Dometic, and you get into these weird things.
Sure. Now, did you say that you work with local RV dealers as well? They're sending you some referral business?
Yep, we work great together. To be honest, there's been a few dealerships we've had to blacklist, and because the dealerships don't pay us. But the most of them do, but dealerships, you just need to kind of size them up. And so if I'm going to do it, if a dealership sends me a job to work on a warranty for them, whether it's an in-house warranty for them because their tech messed up or it's a Jayco warranty, et cetera, if I'm going to do a job that involves a dealership, then I want a dealership's manager signature. I don't want the service writer to say, yep, go ahead, we authorize you. I want it all spelled out up front. Who's going to pay for what? Or who's going to pay for the service call? Who's going to pay for diagnosis? Who's going to pay for parts? All that needs to be spelled out before I actually go out on a call for a dealership.
Okay.
For a warranty, I'll pick on Jayco. Not that they're better or worse or anybody, but if it's a Jayco problem, then my wife and I will work out all the, basically we need to make sure that the payee knows what they're getting themselves into. And if that is a Jayco or if it's an extended service plan, extra ride or something, that everybody wants to know what's, so we have to do a lot of, with the estimating, we have to make sure that, okay, that it's an air conditioner, therefore complaint cause correction. The complaint is it's not working. What's the cause? Well, the compressor's burned up. Well, what's correction? Well, can't just replace it. I got to replace a whole air conditioner. Here's how much it's going to cost. Here's how much this, that, the other. So total upfront transparency on how we run our business and the dealerships, the warranties, the manufacturers, they like to know what they're getting involved in.
Okay. Very good. Now,
we've got a whole process. Yes.
Yeah. Do you have to do a revenue share then with the dealers or do they contract with you on a specific amount?
No, the way I see that is, let's say Greg hires me to, I'll pick on a water heater. I've been doing that all time. So let's say Greg hires me to look at his water heater. So Greg hires me to look at his water heater. Our rates are $150 an hour. And so I'm going to come out there and let's say it's a 2-hour job. So you're looking at $300. So that's a $300 job for Myer Works. We had to fix a widget and do this, that, the other. At the end of the day, we showed up on site, we fixed your water heater and it was a $300 bill. It doesn't matter to me if that job came through a dealership, an extended warranty, a manufacturer, or carrier pigeon. It's a $300 job. So if the dealership sent me to do a job, so let's say you bought your RV from, you know, ABC RV dealership, and ABC RV dealership contacted us and they said, well, Greg's got a problem with his water heater. We need you to go look at it. Okay, great. Dealership, okay, well, I need a manager signature, blah, 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 blah. We need to vet the whole thing. At the end of the day, as long as my RV Works makes our $300, I don't care where it comes from. And so the dealership might say, well, we're going to pay for, you know, this and that, but we're not going to pay for these other things. Well, that means that then I would then invoice you, Greg, for what the dealership's not going to cover.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's still a $300 job.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter who pays for what. And that's fine. When we started with this business and we were doing extended service plans, now, extended service plans are handled differently than a warranty, differently from a dealer, differently from a self-pay. There's different paths, which we could get into a whole nother discussion on. That's a whole nother interview, how all that works. It's kind of exciting. And the reason it's exciting is because you'll be hearing it from my perspective, the guy who actually, we make the phone calls to these extended service companies and how they try to weasel their way out. a lot of people get the version of that story where it's like, oh, they cover everything from bumper to bumper. No, they do not. So we're the ones that have that get the other side of that. Well, they're not going to cover the bumper because that bolt is not covered.
Right.
So one of the systems my wife and I developed in-house, because again, on day one, we started working with extended service. That was part of our business model, was that we were going to get involved in the extended service plans. We also got involved a little bit with the roadside assistance. We were just desperate in the beginning. And so what we've developed over the years, and it's become quite a very elaborate worksheet, if you will, is within Excel, I've created a sheet, and I'd say it would be proprietary, but I could make it available for $1 million. But so if something comes into us and it's a warranty job, then we immediately launch this Excel sheet. And the Excel sheet is something that we've been working on for several years, and to make sure that we ask the right questions. Because when we call these extended service companies, they're going to ask questions in a random order. You better have all your ducks in a row. And so this sheet, that this worksheet that we've created, does capture a lot of, like, mileage is a question. What was their date of purchase? These are the types of questions that you better have up front. But another thing that sheet generates is, it does, like, if let's pick your water heater for $300. Okay, well, we've got to know exactly all the individual pieces, parts that equal that $300. And what the markup is on that, what the labor rate is on that. And so this sheet breaks everything down so that at the end, again, it was a $300 job, but warranty is only going to pay for this, this, this. Our labor rate is 150. Sometimes a warranty will max out at 140. So that means a customer has to pay the additional $10. Sometimes a dealership will pay for the repair, but they will not pay for the on-site. The customer has to pay for the on-site. And so we've created this sheet, and anybody could create their own sheet. And this just comes from years and time in the business, knowing how to massage the you're not massaging the numbers, but massaging the job. I'm making a mess of this. So that at the end of the day, it equals 300, and you know who pays what. And there have been some where there's been five different payees to get one job done. And if you don't have a system in place to capture all of that, then you're giving your store away. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I need my $300, and I don't care if the customer paid for their deductible and the dealership paid for that part and the medic paid for this part and the extended service paid for that part and the warranty paid for that part. It doesn't matter. We get $300 for the job. And if we're not going to get $300 for the job, well, then take it to the dealership and let them figure it all out.
But sure.
It's kind of our attitude.
Sure. You know,
it's not my problem that it's broken. We're just the repair job.
I understand you folks have done pretty well in developing a YouTube channel to promote your services.
Yes, that's been a lot of fun. Quite a shock how that's exploded as it has. That whole thing started because we were working on an Airstream, and Airstream would send us, it was a warranty job, and Airstream would send us these modules to put in these lights. And they'd send me brand new modules and they wouldn't work. And so I decided to make a video to show the engineers at Airstream what I'm dealing with in the field. And that's one of the first videos on our YouTube channel. And after we launched, I'm like, well, that was kind of fun. That was kind of neat. And so then I did another one, and that was kind of fun. And oh, now all of a sudden I get a subscriber. And I remember our first three or four subscribers was really exciting. And now we're over 10,000.
Wow.
And it's just been, it's about a year old. And the greatest joy of that is reading the reviews. And the reviews, there's thousands of reviews, and it takes me some time to actually, when a review comes in, I read it within a couple hours of it coming in. I may not reply. I don't have time. It's an inbox.
Right.
And so once or twice a week, I'll sit down and answer all the things, but I'm realizing that there's quite a niche in this market of explaining how RVs work, because there's so much false information out there from the sales guy, from the dealer. Some people did not get a walkthrough, or they did get a walkthrough. They were given wrong information. And since I'm the guy that fixes it when it breaks, it might be good to get the information from a guy like me, because I'm the one that, what would I benefit from giving you incorrect information? Mm-hmm. I'm the one that's got to fix it. So, But apparently people like my method of teaching and explaining, and it's been fun, and it motivates me to want to do more. And we've got a long list of other ones we want to make, and it takes time and money to make those. And as we get the time to put them together, I'm waiting for, I've got one aqua hot, maybe two aqua hots up there. I love working on the aqua hots and the hurricanes. They're so much fun, but I need more customers to have them broken to come to me so I can fix them and make a video of them. So I don't happen to have one sitting out here with me, but
very good. Where can
that's been fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Where can people find you if they want more information about My RV Works?
On YouTube, you can just go to YouTube. It's My RV Works. You can just run on the YouTube channel. It's My RV Works. Our website, myrvworks.com. When we named the business, we went through a whole bunch of names. I think we had a page of 10 or 15 different, at least 10 names that we were playing around with. And RV Wow and RV Savvy and all these fun, goofy names. And I remember it was important for us to have a name that was memorable and then just kind of rolled off the tongue. I didn't want to have hyphens and commas, and I just wanted it was all about the website. And so we decided to name it My RV Works. And then the tagline became Happy Campers Say My RV Works. Mm-hmm. And then the play on how that works is that used as a noun, a verb, an adjective, you know?
Right.
So, it works. It makes fun. So yeah, My RV Works. And, we say when we're done working on a customer's RV, they're happy. My RV Works. And so, but yeah, that's the website is we're always putting new things on there. The latest thing we've been doing is I've got a lot of service manuals, and I've got some user manuals, but most of these are service manuals, shop manuals, and literally about 2,000 shop manuals because all the training that I go to and years of working on these things. And so we're making a place on the website under the resources tab. As I get more time, the thing is, I have to give the manuals a friendly name, because when you get them, it's 75273.pdf. Right. Like, what the heck is that? I can't upload that. So I've got to take the time to figure out, oh yeah, that's this. And I have to name it something and then just scan it. I don't want to put anything on there that might be proprietary from some of the training that we get. And so I have to review it, make sure that, okay, this is public domain information. Sure enough, here you go. And so a lot of people have enjoyed that because they've been having a difficult time trying to find a service manual for their whatever. And so that's been kind of a nice, it was always important for me to have something, a resource like that. And so we're developing that for folks.
Very good. The one final thing, I know we're running really long in this interview, is I understand you're unique in that you are full-time RVers as well as full-time mobile techs.
Yes, we've been full-timing for 12 years, since 2007.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And so
right now.
Yeah. Do you live in a specific campground, or do you move around the peninsula?
No, what we do, we haven't been in a campground in years. Me as an RV tech living in a campground I'd never get any sleep. So what we do is we rent places. So where we're at now is we've found a place. The landlord has a large building and he's chopped it up into different garages, if you will. So we're renting one of the garage spaces. The guy next to us is a pastor of a church who's a gearhead. So he brings kids from church over and they change oil and take engines apart. And he's the best neighbor in the world. Right now he's in Africa on a missions trip. The guy at the far end builds boats out of wood, and he's kind of a fun guy to play with. Sometimes he's smelled too much glue. I'm like, dude, turn on a fan. And so we're able to keep, we have several RVs. We're able to keep our RVs on the site as well with all full hookups. And we've got two fifth wheels. One fifth wheel is our home, and the other fifth wheel is our office. We basically gutted the fifth wheel where I'm in the part that used to be the bedroom. We've gutted all that. That's now my office. The part that used to be the kitchen in the back, that's my wife's office. So one of our fifth wheels is our office.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also where we have our classroom for our kids. So,
okay.
So one fifth wheel's home, one fifth wheel's office. Then we have a Lance camper we throw in the back of the truck. We go camping and we got a 66 Airstream that is a project we're going to be fixing up and turning into an Airbnb. So if folks want to come camping up here, they can either rent it or we can go set it up at a campground and they can stay in the Airstream.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, Darren. I really appreciate the time. This has been a fascinating story, and it's a success story, too, about how you came out of the corporate world and to pursue your own dream and to become a daddy on demand. Those are all great themes and great motivations for going into business for yourself. And I'm really glad it worked out for you, and I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate the opportunity.
I love listening to stories like Darren Kep's. It's funny how doors can open that lead you to a completely different career and lifestyle. I also find it fascinating that Darren is able to make as much money self-employed as a mobile RV service technician as he did when he was working full-time as an engineer. His approach to marketing is innovative in that he doesn't do any advertising. Rather, he puts on free seminars teaching people how to maintain their own RVs. When they find out how much work it takes, it often opens the door to a paid repair job. Darren doesn't do anything really mechanical. He just does repair jobs that can be completed on site. I appreciate how open he was in describing what it would cost to start a business and how he has automated the process to allow people to schedule their own appointments. It was nice to hear him talk about how a husband and wife could operate the business together to save on overhead. There's a lot of opportunity out there for people who want to be self-employed and make good money and travel the country or just stay parked in one area like Darren and his family does up in Washington. The key is to get solid technical training. With that, you can work virtually anywhere in the country and command an above-average income. If you're interested in learning how to start a mobile RV repair business of your own, or go to work as a campground technician or an RV inspector, I'd encourage you to visit the National RV Training Academy's website at www.nrvta.com. There you'll find a schedule of classes and what it takes to enroll in the training. With those skills, then 2020 could be a knockout year for you, one that allows you to pursue your dreams on your terms. Today's episode is sponsored by Work Camper News, a magazine and online publication that connects RVers to full and part-time jobs around the country. Whether it is running a business from your RV or working short-term jobs for a variety of employers, Work Camper News can give you information to help you plan a course to live your own dream and get you on the road faster than you thought possible. For more information about opportunities to live, work, and play in your RV, visit www.workcampernews.com. I'd like to thank Darren Kep for sharing his inspirational story. I hope it encouraged you to move forward in pursuit of your own dream of providing valuable service either on your own or even by working for someone else. That's all we have for today's show. Next week, we'll talk to a couple who is actively involved with the Road Life Project to support singles, couples, and families as they live and work on the road. One of the services they provide is health insurance, which answers a lot of questions for RVers and people who work from their RVs. Thanks for listening to RV Tech Talk. We'll see you next time.